So we continue with the stories of the patriarchs. Abraham is held up to the reader as a model, a flawed one who had a lot to learn, but one who reached a heroic degree of faith and obedience, such that we can look to him as what Paul calls our father in faith. The story about Esau and Jacob is a story about God who is faithful to his promise and his blessing, brought about, once again, through the weak human beings that he has chosen. The patriarchs are not held up as heroic figures. They're real people like us, with their weaknesses and their good points and so on. So this is a story, the story of Jacob and Esau, the story of a family with plenty of family conflicts. It begins in conflict. Jacob and Esau are twins. Esau is the first one born, and so, by convention, is a key position of power in the family as regards authority and inheritance. Excuse me. However, even in the womb, there's a struggle, and the struggle dominates this whole narrative. There's much more to the struggle than this. The drama plays out because it's God who has ordained it to be this way, and we have no idea why. We're so used to claiming God for the way things are, for the positions of power that we set up by human convention, that we ought to be scandalized by this story. It's about God who will not be bound by our human conventions. Firstborn with authority, etc. This is a story about God who is free, for whom the first will be last and the last first, to quote Jesus. This is a story about God who chooses, according to Paul, what is low and despised in the world, things that are not, to reduce to nothing things that are. It's a story about God who has a preferential option for the poor and who hears their cry. The authors of Deuteronomy remind Israel, to quote from chapter 7, "It was not because you were more numerous than any other people that Yahweh set his heart on you and chose you. You were the fewest of all peoples. It was because Yahweh loved you and kept the oath that he swore to your ancestors, that Yahweh has brought you out with a mighty hand and redeemed you from the house of slavery, from the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Know therefore," say the Deuteronomists, "that Yahweh your God is God, the faithful God who maintains covenant loyalty." So this, pardon the long introduction, but I hope it helps. Eventually we'll get to the text. This is a story of God's blessing that, like the wind, to quote the gospel, blows where it wills. And we can't be sure of the direction, and we certainly can't just look in one direction for God's will. It could come from anywhere. It could come from the second in the family, as in we've seen twice here. And the blessing, furthermore, doesn't mean an untroubled life. Jacob is always in conflict. He's in conflict with Esau throughout the narrative. He's in conflict with his uncle Laban. He's in conflict with his wife Rachel and with his sons. And most significantly at all, he's in conflict with God. And we're going to see that played out. The prophet Hosea sums up his life. Now this is Hosea, this is the middle of the 8th century BC, so proof that the stories, some of them, are already around and being told 300 years before they're written down here in the book of Genesis. The prophet Hosea sums up his life. In the womb, he says, he tried to supplant his brother, and in his manhood, he strove with God. Yet, throughout his troubled life, like us, please God, throughout his troubled life, Jacob keeps encountering God. Just as the people of Israel, throughout their troubled history, experienced the guiding hand of the God who's chosen them in love for a mission to a world that God loves. The authors of the narrative and their readers have lived through and were part of a history of human unfaithfulness. They've also experienced proofs of Yahweh's faithfulness throughout it all. This is a major theme in the stories we're about to read. Genesis chapter 25, verse 21 reads, Isaac prayed to Yahweh for his wife Rebekah because she was barren, just like the mother, like Sarah. So this is another way of saying only God could get this working. And Yahweh granted his prayer and his wife conceived. The children struggled together within her, and she said, if it's to be this way, why do I live? So she went to inquire of Yahweh, and Yahweh said to her, two nations are in your womb. Jacob is the nation of Israel. Esau is the nation of Edom to the south. And when this is being written during the exile period, the Edomites who'd been pushed east by the Nabataean Arabs, so they'd had to move, they took over the whole of the south part of Judah. And there was a lot of bitterness because of that, still at this time. But from this story, we're going to see, actually tomorrow, but we're building up to it now, this is not encouraging that bitterness. Yahweh said to her, two nations are in your womb. The one shall be stronger than the other. And two peoples born of you shall be divided. And this is a clever translation of a clever Hebrew. The older shall the younger serve. It's the kind of thing you used to get from a Pythian oracle. Does that mean the older shall serve the younger? Or does it mean the younger shall serve the older? If you look at it, it's open to both meanings. When her time to give birth was at hand, there were twins in her womb. The first came out red. Esau and red are the same word. Edom also is related to the word red, obviously from the clay and the mountain, the rocks. In any case, the first came out red, all his body like a hairy mantle. So they named him Esau. Afterwards, his brother came out with his hand gripping Esau's heel. So he was named Jacob, because that comes from the doesn't come from it, but there's a pun between the word heel and Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when the twins were born. When the boys grew up, Esau was a skillful hunter, a man of the field, while Jacob was a quiet man living in tents. Isaac loved Esau because he was fond of game, but Rebekah, Isaac's wife, loved Jacob. So here you have a family with different preferences. Once, when Jacob was cooking a stew, Esau came in from the field, so the story goes, and he was really hungry. Esau said to Jacob, "Let me shove some of that red stuff down my throat. I'm dying of hunger." Therefore, say the authors, he was called Edom. Jacob said, "First sell me your birthright." Esau said, "I'm about to die. What's the use of a birthright to me?" So Jacob said, "Swear to me first." So he swore to him and sold his birthright to Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau bread and lentil stew, and he ate and drank and rose and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright, gave it up for some soup. That's essential to the story, as you'll see. Isaac went to Gerar, same place everyone goes to King Abimelech of the Philistines. The Lord appeared to Isaac and said, "Don't go down to Egypt. Settle in the land that I will show you. Reside in this land as an alien." We have not here an abiding city, Paul. "As an alien, and I will be with you, and I will bless you. For to you and to your descendants I will give all these lands, and I will fulfill the oath that I swore to your father Abraham. I will make you offspring as numerous as the stars of heaven." Is the handing on of the repeated blessing. "And will give you to your offspring all these lands, and all the nations of the earth shall gain blessing." Blessing for themselves through your offspring, because Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. You can tell that the priests are writing this. The story goes on. Isaac copies Abraham by passing Rebekah off as his sister. That's the thing to do, apparently. So the same story. It's happened already twice to Abraham. Now it's happening to Isaac. God saves her, however, from having intercourse with Abimelech. So he's keeping the line pure. Isaac moves around to secure the wells. And then Isaac went up to Beersheba. Sheba means seven, so the seven wells. Yahweh appeared to him and said, "I am the God of your father Abraham. Do not be afraid, for I am with you. And I will bless you and make your offspring numerous for my servant Abraham's sake." Then there's a pact, which I'll leave unread, between Abimelech and Isaac. And then Jacob obtains Isaac's blessing, once again by trickery. And our sympathy is not with Jacob or his mother, you're lying to Dad, but as you read the story, if you read it fully, our sympathy is with the dad and with Esau. When Isaac was old and his eyes were dim so that he couldn't see, he called his elder son Esau and said to him, "My son," he said, "here I am." He said, "See, I'm old. I don't know the day of my death. Now then, take your weapons, your quiver and your bow, and go out to the field and hunt game for me. Then prepare for me savory food, such as I like, and bring it to me to eat, so that I may bless you before I die. Blessing sensual from father to the elder son. Carry on the line and carry on the promise, etc. But Rebecca was listening. Mums don't behave like this today, but in their day of this. Rebecca listened when Isaac spoke to his son Esau. So when Esau went to the field to hunt for game and bring it, Rebecca said to her son, her favourite son, Jacob, "I heard your father say to your brother Esau, 'Bring me game and prepare for me savoury food to eat, that I may bless you before the Lord before I die.' Now therefore, son, obey my word as I commanded you. Go to the flock, get me two choice kids, so that I may prepare from them savoury food for your father, such as he likes. And you shall take it to your father to eat, so that he may bless you before he dies." God is working through all the shenanigans of our life and our sins and our failures. They're never good, but God can work through anything to bring about the blessing. So, leave unread for a moment. Rebecca orders Jacob to cover himself to feel like Esau. So he puts skins on to make him look hairy. How this works, I don't know. Three times Isaac questions him, and three times Jacob persists in his deception. And the text goes on, "And his father Isaac said to him, 'Come near and kiss me, my son.' So he came near and kissed him, and the father smelt the smell of his garments and blessed him and said, 'Ah, the smell of my son is like the smell of a field that Yahweh has blessed. May God give you,'" he's the blessing, "'may God give you of the dew of heavens and of the fatness of the earth and plenty of grain and wine. Let people serve you and nations bow down to you. Be Lord over your brothers, and may your mother's sons bow down to you. Cursed be any everyone who curses you, and blessed be everyone who blesses you.'" So Isaac, in obedience to God, as he thinks, is handing on the blessing to his firstborn son. There's a little picture there of Jacob, and there's Mum checking that the elder boy hasn't come back, and Dad, who's blind, is giving the blessing. As soon as Isaac had finished blessing Jacob, when Jacob had scarcely gone out from his presence of his father Isaac, his brother Esau came in from his hunting. He also prepared savoury food and brought it to his father, and he said to his father, "Let my father sit up and eat of his son's game, so that you may bless me." His father Isaac said to him, "Who are you?" "I'm your firstborn son, Esau. Then Isaac trembled violently, and he said, "Who was it then that hunted game and brought it to me, and I ate it all before you came, and I have blessed him? Yes, and blessed he shall be." You can't take back the blessing. When Esau heard his father's words, he cried out with an exceedingly great and bitter cry, and he said to his father, "Bless me also, father." The father said, "Your brother came deceitfully, and he has taken away your blessing. You remember the gospel in St. Nathaniel, isn't it? Who Jesus says, he is Israel without guile. Not like the original one who was full of guile. Esau said, is he not rightly named Jacob? For he has supplanted me these two times. He took away my birthright, and look, now he's taken away my blessing. But he said, have you not reserved a blessing for me? And Isaac answered Esau, I have already made him your lord. Obviously, this is written by Israel about Edom. I've already made him your lord, and I've given him all his brothers as servants, and with grain and wine I have sustained him. What can I do for you, my son? Esau said to his father, have you only one blessing, father? Bless me also, father. And Esau lifted up his voice and wept. Then his father Isaac answered Esau, see, away from the fatness of the earth shall your home be, because it's pretty arid down in Edom, not like Galilee, etc. Away from the fatness of the earth shall your home be, away from the dew of heaven on high. By your sword you shall live, and you shall serve your brother. But when you break loose, you shall break his yoke from your neck. And already Edom has broken away, and they're at loggerheads. Now Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing with which his father had blessed him. And Esau said to himself, the days of mourning for my father are approaching. Then I will kill my brother Jacob. So that's what we're expecting. I will kill my brother Jacob. The words of her eldest son Esau were told to Rebekah. So she sent and called her younger son Jacob and said to him, your brother Esau is consoling himself by planning to kill you. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice. Flee at once to my brother Laban in Haran, Syria. Stay with him a while until your brother's fury turns away, until your brother's anger against you turns away and he forgets what you've done to him. Then I will send and bring you back from there. Why should I lose both of you in one day? Then Rebekah said to Isaac, I'm weary of my life because of the Hittite women, Esau's wives. We didn't mention that, but he's already married Hittite wives. If Jacob marries one of the Hittite women such as these, one of the women of the land, what good will my life have been? So, story, Isaac sends Jacob up to Rebekah's brother Laban in Syria. He then gives him the blessing, gives his son the blessing that was his due because of the covenant, a blessing not of power and wealth, that's already been given to Jacob, but a blessing of children and land. There was no need for deception, no need for Jacob to want to supplant his brother Esau. And the text reads, this is from Isaac to Esau the firstborn. May God Almighty bless you and make you fruitful and numerous, that you may become a company of peoples. May he give to you the blessing of Abraham, to you and to your offspring with you, so that you may take possession of the land where you now live as an alien, and that God gave to Abraham.
Sorry, Michael, who is saying those words? Michael?
Sorry?
Yeah. Who are you quoting?
Well, let me just find it again. But there. This is Isaac blessing his elder son. The other is the Lord, but he's giving him the blessing that he wanted to give him. And we're going to see tomorrow how that blessing emerges quite beautifully between the two brothers.
Thank you.
Esau marries again, and this time he doesn't marry a Hittite. He hears that Jacob has been sent off to find a wife. And when Esau saw that the Canaanite women didn't please his father Isaac, Esau went to Ishmael and took Mahalath, daughter of Abraham's son Ishmael, and sister of Nebaioth, to be his wife, in addition to the wives he already had. So he's marrying in a proper way. Now we come to a scene that you're all familiar with, but it's very beautiful. Jacob left Beersheba, right down south of Judah, and he went towards Haran, where his uncle is. He came to a certain place and stayed there for the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones of the place, he put it under his head and lay down in that place. And he dreamed that there was a ladder set up on the earth, the top of it reaching to heaven, and the angels of God were ascending and descending. That's Gustave Doré's way of picturing this ladder going to the heavens, connecting God and the earth at Bethel. Yahweh stood beside Jacob and said, "I am Yahweh, the God of Abraham your father and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie, I will give to you and to your offspring, and your offspring shall be like the dust of the earth. And you shall spread abroad to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south, and all the families of the earth shall be blessed in you and in your offspring." It's difficult for us, I think, to read that last thing without thinking of Paul and the Christian church, which was a Jewish church, at last able to go beyond the tribalism, etc., and reach to the ends of the earth. That's the promise, and that's what Paul picked up. He saw himself as being absolutely faithful to this whole tradition, whereas a lot of his contemporaries got locked in and remained with their cult and their nation and their antipathies, etc. Whereas Paul wanted to take this promise to the ends of the earth. Jacob is given the same promise of land that was given to Abraham and to Isaac. He's given the same promise of a multitude of descendants that was given to Abraham and to Isaac. And he's given a promise already given to Abraham and to Isaac: all the families of the earth will be blessed in you and in your offspring. "Now know that I am with you," God says to Jacob, "and I will keep you wherever you go. And I'll bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I've done what I have promised you. A beautiful verse, obviously, to take very personally. Whatever God promised you and me when we were conceived, uniquely, there is a promise there, and there's a hope there, and there's a blessing there, and there's a purpose there. Well, God says to each one of us, know that I'm with you, and I'll keep you wherever you go. And I'll bring, he's off, heading off to Syria, I'll bring you back to this land. Bethel is in the centre of it. I won't leave you until I've done all that I have promised you. Then Jacob woke from his sleep and said, surely Yahweh is in this place, and I didn't know it. And he was afraid and said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God, which is the meaning of Beth, house, El, God, Beth, El. It is the house of God. It is the gate leading up to connect with heaven. So Jacob rose early in the morning, and he took the stone that he'd put under his head and set it up for a pillar and poured oil on the top of it. He called that place Beth-El, but the name of the city was Luz at the first. Then Jacob made a vow, saying, if God will be with me and will keep me in this way that I go, and will give me bread to eat and clothing to wear so that I can come again to my father's house in peace, then Yahweh shall be my God. And this stone, which I've set up for a pillar, shall be God's house, and of all that you give me, I will surely give one-tenth to you. No doubt in the sanctuary at Bethel, this was a story that when people asked, why is there a sanctuary here? This is the story they were told. Jacob commits himself and his descendants to worship only Yahweh. He also sets up what was to become a temple, mentioned in Amos and in the Kings. It was the main temple of the northern kingdom, Israel, thereby committing himself and his descendants to worship. He promises to give a tithe, thereby committing himself and his descendants to the recognition that the land is not his, it belongs to Yahweh. So this is his renting of it, who has given it into Israel's care.